Hey, what's going on, guys? You're listening to the Professional Horror Podcast, the podcast that, you know, sometimes struggles to make an intro joke. I am your very pretty host, Chris Donovan, and this episode, 'tis the goddamn season for a top 10 horror movies of the year list. And this year, I'm only like, you know, a week and a half or so late, you know, as opposed to the 20 plus days I was last year. You know, it's called growth. Look it up. Man. This past month and a half, binging movies for this list, I may have girl-bossed a little too close to the sun with this, trying to watch all the movies to make this list, so you know, my wings are pretty singed at the moment. But, as always, whenever I make one of these top 10 lists, I gotta hit y'all with all these caveats and, you know, asterisks and all the other... There's a lot of admin. There's a lot of admin to get through. I did not get to see every horror movie that came out this year. I wish I did, but I'm bad at things. I saw 58 of them, though, which is a personal record. And at some point in this episode, I will tell you each of the 58 movies I saw. So if at any point you're like, Chris, I think you're forgetting about this movie. Why isn't it number 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, and 7? Simple. If I didn't mention it, I did not see it. Because of the old panoramic that's still going on, I didn't really get to go to the theater, like, at all. I never felt comfortable at any point this year to do it, even though there are a lot of movies I wanted to see, such as, like, Antlers. And because of that, I never got to see Antlers, even though I was kind of really hyped for it, which is unfortunate, but, you know. And also, let's be real. I watched, like, 40-plus movies in December alone to make this list, so I had to really get choosy with what movies made my watch list and what I decided I was just, you know, gonna save for another time and just not even watch at all. I know that to some people that's nothing, like you can just like binge 8 movies in a day or something, but as I've said before, my brain's just not built for binging. I'm a procrastinator with a short attention span, and this is very difficult for me, so I'm sorry. These are the movies I saw. I watched a lot. As far as the you know, the year in review, if I can just like talk about this, which is an interesting phenomenon. I think there are only a handful of like really top tier, excellent, oh my god, has to make my list movies. And then there was a whole heap of really good movies, like anywhere from, I don't know, there, like, I have a really bloated honorable mention list and other movies, and any, like, legitimately, like, 30 movies probably were competing for the bottom 3 or 4 spots on my list. It was a difficult list to make, but I think I've narrowed it to exactly what I want it to be. And hopefully I won't in 2 weeks be like, man, I should have put that in the list. Or, man, I really underrated that movie. I typically don't try to second guess my list, but it happens. And lastly, the biggest caveat of all, this list is my opinion. And moreover, I have weird opinions. I'm not snubbing movies or picking movies to be cool or different and not like other girls. This list is my true opinion, and I understand that I'm kind of weird. So, there are going to be movies that I don't select and people are going to think I'm crazy. There are movies that I am going to pick, and they're going to be like, really? What? Why? Why would you even watch that, let alone put it on your top 10? And I understand that. That's just, you know, I'm weird, and I accept that. I have noticed, as a general thing, in the past couple of years, my general interest in those, like, 2.5-hour, slow build, depressing movies that are metaphors for grief or mental illness has severely dwindled. Not that I'm saying any of those movies are bad movies. Most of the movies in that wheelhouse are really well made and really well done. It's just that I'm just so much less interested in watching them, and so my reaction to them isn't as high as it was a few years ago. It's like, the world's depressing enough, man. I just really have been looking for some more fun and a little bit more escapism. And that's just how my brain is currently built. Maybe in a couple of years, I'll be like, oh man, everything's too happy. Everything, yeah, let's get, where can we have more quiet deconstruction movies? I don't know. Who knows? Who knows what the future holds? I sure don't. I only can tell you what's happening so far, and even barely so. So with all that out of the way, let's crack on and make my top 10 horror movies of 2021. Number 10. My number 10 pick is Willy's Wonderland. Willy's Wonderland has a 5.5 out of 10 rating on IMDb and a 61% approval on Rotten Tomatoes. The synopsis is, a quiet loner, Nicolas Cage, finds himself stranded in a remote town when his car breaks down. Unable to pay for the repairs he needs, he agrees to spend the night cleaning Willy's Wonderland, an abandoned family fun center. But this Wonderland has a dark secret that the janitor is about to discover. He soon finds himself trapped inside Willy's and locked in an epic battle with the possessed animatronic mascots that roam the halls. To survive, he must fight his way through each of them. It is directed by Kevin Lewis and written by G.O. Parsons, and it stars, obviously, Nick Cage. Willy's Wonderland, man, it was just, again, when I was talking about I just wanted fun movies, this is fun. fun, 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 till the day it takes the T-Bird away. Is that how that song goes? I'm not from the 60s. But it's funny to me that, like, last year or the year before, I think it was 2019, we had the Banana Splits movie, and now we have Willy's Wonderland. It's like a lot of movies are really beating Five Nights at Freddy's to the punch as far as their movie, whenever that eventually comes out, if it ever does eventually come out, because I'm not familiar with Five Nights at Freddy's. I've not played any of the games. I have heard that the creator was in hot water for some comments about something. I'm not super familiar with it, but I do know that even if that movie does eventually come out, it's going to have some very stiff competition from Willy's Wonderland, because this movie was a blast. Nicolas Cage does not say a single line of dialogue in this whole movie. All he does is chug soda, play pinball, and beat the crap out of animatronic mascots. And that's just what more do you need out of a movie, really? What I love about this, it takes a really fun, dumb premise and adds like this weird sort of not even experimental, but like, you hire Nick Cage and you're not gonna have him say a single line. That's just bonkers. Who okayed that decision? But it works perfectly. Nicolas Cage, it seems like he's just like, it's weird that he's almost like in the prime of his career, because he's just nailing these ridiculously out there movies. And this was no exception. I had a blast watching it. There is some actual cool, interesting human stories once there's another set of characters that comes involved. I did find them, for the most part, to be a little bit weird, because like, the characters who join Nicolas Cage at Willy's Wonderland, they know what's up with Willy's Wonderland, or they at least suspect something is up with Willy's Wonderland. So they were a little bit too cliche, horror, dumb for my taste, just because I was like, you went in knowing this was a bad thing, and yet you did all the dumb stuff that people in horror movies do all the time. That was a little bit annoying. But just to see, you know, Nicolas Cage, you know, wrecking through a bunch of like Chuck E. Cheese robots, come on, what more do you ask for? And that's why Willy's Wonderland is number 10 on my list. Oh god, I didn't do the thing. What am I doing with my existence? I didn't do the, hey, here's where you can find all these movies. I don't think it's streaming anywhere, but... Ooh, yeah, I hear that typing noise in the background. You can find Willy's Wonderland streaming on the usual suspects, Vudu, Prime, YouTube, Google, Apple TV, and at Spears, you can also find it on a premium subscription to Hulu, and I would check it out. It was a lot of fun. You know, go into it saying, hey, I'm going to watch Nick Cage in a haunted Chuck E. Cheese, and if that appeals to you, this movie will really appeal to you. And that's my number 10 pick. Number 9. My number 9 pick is Val. Val has a 5.9 out of 10 rating on IMDb, and it only has like 4 reviews on Rotten Tomatoes, so it's not like, you know, it doesn't have enough for them to actually put up a percentage, last I checked. But 3 of them were good, so I'm confident calling it a 75% approval on Rotten Tomatoes. Val is directed by Aaron Friedkin, or Fradkin, and is written by Aaron Fradkin and Victoria Fratz, and it stars Misha Reeves. Val is about a criminal on the run who breaks into the home of a high-class escort, only to realize nothing is as it seems. This was a very interesting movie, because I actually known Misha Reeves, because she's friends, I mean, not know personally, but like I followed her on social media stuff prior to this movie, just because I know she's friends with the hosts of Goosebumps Welcome to Deadcast, the Goosebumps podcast, Matthew Scott Montgomery and Dana Montgomery. And so when she announced that she was going to be the lead in this movie, and I was reading about it when it first was announced, I was like, this is perfect. This is absolutely spot on. The movie for her, the role for her. She was born to play like this femme fatale type character. She's fantastic. As the synopsis entails, this movie's about a guy who's on the run. We allegedly has killed somebody, and he's running away. He's trying to make it seem like he's this dangerous, on the loose murderer. And he holds up in Val's house, and he's like, you're gonna give me all your money, and you're gonna do whatever I say, because I'm a bad man, I'm a killer. And it's a very interesting power dynamic that goes back and forth throughout the course of the movie, because Val, she deals with dangerous people in her line of work. She's kind of like she's an escort. She's also kind of like a dominatrix type. So she's used to, she's very at home dealing with a hostile power dynamic and morphing it into a favorable position for herself. So it's a weird, so there's a real cat and mouse aspect of their relationship, which I think is really fascinating. I do think it is a little slow in the middle. It seems like this movie probably would fit better as like an hour long kind of special thing, not like hour long is in like an hour long TV show. It's like 44 minutes with ad breaks. I mean, like an hour 60 minutes long, and it's kind of stretched to an hour 20, but I still think it's really good. I still think the performance and the back and forth dynamic for the first hour or so is really, really good. And then when it hits into that next shot, I'm not going to spoil anything because you haven't seen this movie, but when it hits into that next level of, when it gets kind of insane towards the end, I thought it was really fun. It was just balls to the wall craziness. And I had a time and a half watching it. You can currently either see Val on VOD or for free on Vudu or Tubi currently. But yeah, you guys should check it out. It's a really fun movie. And anyone who is casting a noir film or a horror film that, you know, has a femme fatale, please hire Misha Reeves. She's fantastic. She's perfect for that kind of role. Number eight. My number eight pick is a tie because I am a cheating cheater who cheats, but only at things that are not important, such as my top 10 list. Don't cheat on important things, folks. Cheat on things that are dumb, like video games. Who cares if you cheat in video games? Put in all the cheat codes. Have a blast. The life lessons you guys get from me. So my two number eight picks are Initiation and Malignant. I was really hoping to get Initiation on this list because it was a really, it's an underseen movie and I thought it was really cool. You guys know I love my slashers. I'll start with Initiation. Initiation has a 5.1 out of 10 rating on IMDb and a 60% approval on Rotten Tomatoes. It is directed by John Barrado, written by John Barrado, Lindsay Lavanchi, and Brian Frager, and stars Isabella Gomez. Initiation is about... During a university's pledge week, the carefree partying turns deadly serious when a star athlete is found impaled in his dorm. The murder ignites a spree of sinister social media messages, sweeping the students and police into a race against time to uncover the truth behind the school's dark secrets and the horrifying meeting of a recurring symbol, a single exclamation mark. Initiation is a bit of a slow burn slasher. It doesn't have a high body count in the slightest, but it plays with that whodunit angle very well. It's much more Scream than Halloween, even though it's not, Scream's one of those movies you never want to compare to other movies unless it's self-referential, because then people go into it expecting a Scream type of film, and this is not that. But it is human, mask whodunit kind of slasher. I thought it was really well done, especially there's one scene where the lead character, as we've learned, a star athlete, is found impaled in his dorm. That's in the synopsis, that's not a spoiler. The scene when his sister is told that information, I found that scene to be absolutely heartbreakingly well done. Sometimes you hear people complain about horror movies and they say, well, no one cares when people die. Show them this scene, because this was really affecting to me. I thought it was really well done. And the whole movie, it was just fun. It was like a slasher that was serious and it had serious issues. It wasn't trying to be comedic, but it's also not a deconstruction of, slashers. It's not deconstruction of grief or something. It's just a really tight hour and a half movie. And I think well worth your time. You can find it on VOD at all the usual sites. I personally watched it at a Redbox, which I don't know if I'm the only person in the world who uses Redbox still, but hey, I think it's a pretty convenient thing. But yeah, I found it from there as one of my like Redbox movie nights and was kind of blown away because I'd heard a few rumbles on social media about this movie and was like, who knows if this is going to be any good, but it's a slasher, I'll watch it. And then I watched it and I was like, wow, this was a lot better than I had thought going in. So yeah, hopefully you guys will think that as well. Let's move on to the other half of my number eight, which is Malignant. Malignant has a 6.3 out of 10 rating on IMDb and a 76% rating on Rotten Tomatoes. It is directed by James Wan, written by Akela Cooper, I'm not sure how you pronounce that, and stars Annabelle Wallace, I believe is how it's pronounced. Malignant is about 27 long years after the brutal Simeon Research Hospital incident. Abused Madison wakes up in a hospital in present-day Seattle, but with numbing visions of murder getting in the way of a normal life more and more, Madison's obscure past emerges, baffling both herself and the local detectives. Are these explicitly violent killings figments of Madison's troubled imagination? Either way, someone, or better yet, something, links the past to the present, demanding closure and blood. Is the boogeyman real? Oh man, I'm having fun with doing dramatic synopsis readings. Malignant is total batshit. I love how after James Wan made all of the money with Aquaman, Warner Brothers just handed him a bag and said, whatever you want to make, man, you go nuts, you have fun. And he said, bet. And he made there's more batshit on screen in this movie than there is in any other movie I've seen this year. Fantastically done. Kudos to you, sir. Some people have said it's similar to a giallo, and I'm not super well versed in giallo, but I know it's not really that. It's much more of a slasher with some mystery elements, and it's hard to talk about this movie without spoiling it, because I mean it's a lot of the craziness, a lot of stuff you want to talk about is spoiler territory. But I will just say I think the kills were cool. I think the overall mood and the there's a lot of really cool transitions that were pretty awesome. How those visions that said in the synopsis, so it's not a spoiler that Madison has are really cool and really intricate looking. And also top tier weapon choice for a slasher, that like gold like dagger that he held in his hand. Oh my god, I want one. It's so cool looking. I feel like I'm just saying like, this is my pick, it's cool. But, you know, I don't want to spoil Malignant for you guys if you haven't seen it. I'm sure most of you have seen it, so I probably can spoil it. But, you know, it's weird. I love a movie that just kind of says, screw it, I'm doing what I feel like I'm doing, you know? I've heard some people say Malignant is the movie James Wan wanted Dead Silence to be. And I can definitely see that, because there's definitely a little bit of... It's not similar to Dead Silence in that, you know, really at all. But I can see the sort of, like, really out there parts of Dead Silence that kind of got a little bit pulled back, being used to their fullest extent in Malignant. But James Wan, I think, is a modern horror master. And so if you want to see a modern horror master... with no strength attached, just being able to go and make whatever movie he felt like making, then you should check out Malignant, because it's super fun, man. Also, as a side note, I actually really, 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 really like Dead Silence. I don't know why people hate on that movie. Malignant, of course, is available on all the classic, all your VODs. I'm sure it's out on Blu-ray and DVD at the moment. I watched it at Redbox as again. Go to your local library. Support your libraries. I'm sure they have a copy of Malignant. A surprising amount of movies that I watched for this list came from one of my local libraries. So, you know, support those two. Next up, number 7. My number 7 pick is Vicious Fun. Vicious Fun is a 6.6 out of 10 rating on IMDb and an 88% approval on Rotten Tomatoes. It is directed by Cody Callahan, written by Cody Callahan, Christopher Ware Smets, and James Villanueva, and stars Evan Marsh. Vicious Fun is about a loser whose life is passing him by accidentally stumbles into a secret underground self-help group for serial killers. Can he match wits with 5 killers and make it through the night alive? Stuck with only 2 options, kill or be killed. Joel will have to find his inner serial killer and muster hidden strength to defeat the maniacs in his midst. I'm having a blast. Vicious Fun is just that. It is a movie that does not take itself very seriously. It has that sort of like, if anyone's seen the movie Feast, I felt like that. You know how like Feast has those like character breakdowns where like they show the, you know, this guy, he's the savior. He's, look at it. I think they also had like stat bars in Feast. Correct me if I'm wrong on that one. But Vicious Fun is similar in that it's literally like 5 different horror movie killers in one room having a self-help group, which is just fun to begin with. But like one is very much like a your classic Michael Jason. One is your is like a Hannibal Lecter type. Another is like a almost like an American Psycho Patrick Bateman type. And it's just a lot of fun. I love the cat and mouse element of him being in this serial killer help group for a little bit is really fun. And then when it devolves, it also becomes this really cool thing. It's a movie with style. It's a movie that is like whenever I see a movie like this, it's similar to a movie called Bloodfest that was on my list a couple years ago. It's like whenever you just bring in a bunch of different horror elements, when I get like a little variety in like a slasher type environment, I'm all for it, man. I love these kinds of like, it's almost like characters from multiple movies come together and they're all stuck in one movie together. I love that kind of storytelling. I think it's really cool. And I wish there was more of that. I would love to see movies of like, I don't know. I love to see other kinds of situations where like other, like you get a bunch of different horror movie villains or even horror movie final girls together in the same room. There was a lot of that kind of crossover this year with like Grady Hendrix's The Final Girl support group, which I loved as well. I love that sort of like crossover appeal without really being a crossover. And this was really fun to watch just because seeing a group of serial killers trying to work together against this one guy who's just like this hapless dork, it was really good. But he's also, it has that element of, again, not like Scream, but he is a horror movie expert, Joel, the main character. So he has that sort of like mindset already. So he's almost like the natural opponent for these kind of guys. But I would highly recommend you watch Vicious Fun. It's available on Shudder, and it's a good time. Number 6. My number six pick is Slumber Party Massacre. Hell yeah. Slumber Party Massacre has a 5.0 out of 10 on IMDb and a 100% approval on Rotten Tomatoes. Oh, I'm going to mispronounce that name so badly. It is directed by Danishka Esterhazy and is written by Suzanne Kelly and Hannah Gonera. The Slumber Party Massacre is based on the 1982 original. This remake follows Dana and her group of friends as they go on a trip to have a slumber party. But after car trouble causes them to stay at a secluded cabin, their fun turns to terror as their night becomes a fight for survival as they must escape a drill-wielding killer. So yes, this is a remake of the Slumber Party Massacre franchise, which I'm a big fan of. I love the first one, and two is just the exact right amount of batshit for me. I love the guitar with the drill. I love Let's Buzz, Tokyo Convertible, the whole nine yards. I love that movie to death. And this movie was a lot of fun. Sci-fi original movie, getting its representation, of course, again on the list. You love to see it. But this movie was a very enjoyable watch for me because it started out, like, I was kind of questioning it because it started out cliche and actually in very, very, very incredibly on the nose cliche. And I'm like, huh, it's weird. I really didn't think it was going to go this direction. And then there's a bit of a switcheroo that happens, and I won't spoil it, but there's a thing that happens. There's a quote unquote thing. And that from that point, it goes, oh my God, this movie is like, it's just, the direction it takes is just so interesting and so intriguing that you're like, wow, this movie is really, it hooked me immediately into the film. And I was like, fuck yeah, this movie rocks. The driller killer that they used in this movie might as well have been pulled directly out of the original too, as far as that goes. But the cast of characters feels like a perfect kind of cast of characters for a reboot type film, which I think makes this a very, very effective reboot because it takes the things you really loved about the first movie, which is you had a nondescript killer with a over-the-top weapon with his, you know, his not at all penis replacement giant drill that he kills people with. And then what I've always loved about all the Slumber Party Massacre movies is I felt like the main cast of characters that all have these really, they all felt really real. They all felt really like, they felt like friends. They felt like people, which is a hard balance to strike in horror movies. And I definitely think this movie nailed it as well, which is the highest bar I can give to most horror movies. And it's the highest indicator that I'm going to love that movie is if the people feel like actual people. And I don't want to spoil too much, so I'm going to leave it at that. But I will say, if you have reservations about this because it's a reboot or because it's a sci-fi original or started at least on sci-fi, please don't. I know a lot of people have been praising this movie, and I'm just going to be the latest to jump on that bandwagon. It's fantastic. You can rent it on VOD. It's on premium subscription to Shudder, to Hulu if you have that. I think it's coming out on DVD Blu-ray soon. I want to pick it up for sure and watch the... Because, I watched it on sci-fi, so there's going to be some extra juicy bits, I'm sure, that were edited out of the for a TV version, which I'm excited to see. So, and I hope you do as well, because from what I've seen, Danishka Esterhazy, her work right now is just like, she's had a lot of really fun projects, and I can't wait to see what she does from here, because I'm a fan. Number five. There we go. That's the right voice. That's the right tenor. My number five pick, bit of an off the board pick, but I don't care, is Horror in the High Desert. Horror in the High Desert has a 5.4 out of 10 rating on IMDb, and it has no Rotten Tomatoes reviews, which is unfortunate. The movie is written and directed by Dutch March and starring Suze Lee Block. Horror in the High Desert is about, in July 2017, an experienced outdoor enthusiast vanished in northern Nevada while on an outdoor excursion. After an extensive search, he was never located. On the 3-year anniversary of his disappearance, friends and loved ones recall the events leading up to his vanishing, and for the first time, speak about the horrifying conclusion of his fate. Horror in the High Desert. This is a very interesting one because I was pretty much all set with movies. I had seen 56 when I watched this movie. No, I said this was the last movie I saw of the year, so I had seen 57, and I was ready to call it quits. I was ready to say, okay, done and dusted. Let's make this list. And then I was on Twitter, and I saw some people talking about this movie. They were saying, hey, this movie's actually, like, really good. And I was like, oh, God, I'm going to have to watch another movie, aren't I? It just got the buzz that intrigued me at the exact wrong time, or right time, you know what I mean. And so I went to Tubi, because it's for free on Tubi, and I was like, okay, cool, I'll watch it. I knew very little about it, and this movie really did a number on me. I'm not gonna lie to you. Even though I had heard, hey, this movie's actually pretty good, I was like, yeah, sure, whatever. Let's watch it, see what we got. And it kind of really hit me. I was like, not expecting this movie at all. It plays out as a fake missing persons documentary. You have talking head segments, you have recreations, you have video evidence, you have, you know, because the person who disappeared was a blogger and a YouTuber, so you have clips from his show spliced in there. You have voiceover from, like, you know, whatever, whoever's hosting the documentary, essentially. And I just found it to be really effective. It really took its time. It's an hour and 20 minutes, but it took its time to really lay out the characters, to lay out the lay of the land, to lay out this mystery, and then step by step just kind of unfold it bit by bit for you. And it was really just incredibly well paced, I thought. It really had that mystery, and it just sort of kept reeling you in. Because, like I said, this movie's about this survivalist who's a YouTuber blogger who blogs about how to survive in the wilderness. So the fact that he disappeared is weird because he was definitely skilled enough to just survive on his own. They ended up finding his truck, but that's weird because he would never put his truck on there. You know, things like that. They just kind of keep setting this up to be like, oh, don't worry. And then, oh, wait a minute. Then as you evaluate more, as more context is put onto it, you go, oh, wow, something must have happened to him. And then the last 20 minutes or so is like we have the last footage. We were able to recover the last footage that he recorded kind of thing. And holy crap, was it good. It was really scary. I was not expecting to be that, like, freaked out by this. But it's almost like it was like a missing persons doc for an hour and Blair Witch Project for 20 minutes. And I was definitely surprised at how effective those 20 minutes were. That really sort of set the scene. I mean, that really sort of elevated this movie to the next level, because without it, it would have been a cool experimental film. Then I would have been like, hey, check this movie out, guys. It was really cool. I wasn't expecting that. But then the last 20 minutes, I was like, holy shit, I'm actually kind of scared right now. This is a very effective storytelling, very effectively laid out. Like I said, very well paced, very well acted, and very well presented. It really nailed that missing person doc format. And I was just blown away by it. I was really a fan of it. And I think it was really funny how they sort of cheekily hinted that it might be a sequel, which I'm for. I'll watch it. Please. I'm excited to see whatever comes next out of this. Horror in the High Desert can be found on VOD sites. And also, I watched it for free on Tubi. Can't recommend Tubi enough as a platform. And also, like I said, you can watch it there. Really hope you guys do. Because out of all the movies out of my top 10, I feel like most people who, you know, are in the know of horror are gonna, like, just know most of my picks right off the bat. Maybe like one or two, they'll be like, huh, wait, what? And this is probably one of the ones that'll probably give people like, hey, what's that movie? So if I can get some more eyes on that movie, I'd be very happy. They did a bang up job with it. My number four pick is Psycho Goreman. Psycho Goreman has a 6.3 out of 10 on IMDb and a 92% approval on Rotten Tomatoes. Psycho Goreman is written and directed by Stephen Kostansky and stars Nita Josie Hanna Psycho Goreman is about siblings Mimi and Luke unwittingly resurrect an ancient alien overlord. Using a magical amulet, they force the monster to obey their childish whims and accidentally attract a rogues gallery of intergalactic assassins to small-town suburbia. Psycho Goreman is just so much goddamn fun. Oh my god. It's like, for those who don't know, one other thing, like, you guys all know, obviously, I'm super, super, super into horror. You know something else I'm super, super, super into? Power Rangers. And this movie was literally like horror movie Power Rangers. Like, it was so good. There's so many practical effects of these giant suited. They look like Power Ranger villains, half of them. These giant monsters. They're coming to destroy the world, or they're coming to destroy our Psycho Goreman. I'm sorry, it's actually PG Psycho Goreman. Just cut that part into the beginning, Chris. But they all look like Power Ranger villains, just fighting each other in these crazy, over-the-top fight scenes. It's just, it hit all the right beats for me. This, like, 9-year-old girl, however old she is, just being, like, the most evil person on the planet. I mean, controlling the most evil being in the universe. It was so, so good. There's musical numbers. The setups and callbacks in this movie. Like, there's one time where they're, like, towards the end when they need a big climactic duel, I was like, please tell me they're gonna bring this back, and they do, and it's perfect. I said this before earlier, I just want movies that are fun. I want some more fun movies, and Psycho Goreman is just that. It is just a blast of a film. Does it have anything to say about humanity or anything? No, I don't think so. I think it's just about having about a giant monster destroying the world, but it's just too fun. Again, another installment of my list where I'm just like, I like it. Watch it, I guess, guys. Oh my God. There's a scene where Psycho Goreman reveals that eating your opponent is considered a warrior's death where he's from. And so there's a couple moments in the film where he's fighting someone and he's like, yes, you fought nobly. I will give you a warrior's death. And his opponent's like, no, that's fine. Oh, shit. What a movie. PG Psycho Goreman is available to watch on Shudder, and you should be watching it. I cannot believe it took me as long as it did. It came out in January. I watched it in December, and I am kicking myself for not watching it earlier. What a film. Number three. My number three pick is Werewolves Within. Werewolves Within has a 6.0 out of 10 on IMDb and an 86% approval on Rotten Tomatoes. It is directed by Josh Rubin, written by Mishna Wolf, and starring Sam Richardson. Werewolves Within is about a proposed gas pipeline has created divisions within the small town of Beaverfield. When a snowstorm traps its residents together inside the local inn, newly arrived forest ranger Finn and postal worker Cecily must try to keep the peace and uncover the truth by a mysterious creature that has begun terrorizing the community. Technically speaking, this is based on a video game, a VR video game called Werewolves Within. So technically this makes this, I think, pretty clearly the best video game movie of all time. Like, it's not even a question. But moreover than that, it is also based on the in-person, you know, party game Ultimate Werewolf, as I've played it when I was in college, we called it Mafia. Same concept. But not only is this movie just a really, really, really fun horror comedy about a small town murder mystery, and it has werewolves, which you guys know me. You guys know I love werewolves. I also felt like it nailed that aspect of the game. Like, I played Mafia dozens and dozens of times, and there's always that aspect of just, like, nobody trusts anyone. We're throwing accusations at each other, and it doesn't even matter if they stick or anything. It just is such chaos and discord between all of the players that nothing ever gets done. The town, it's almost like the Mafia or the werewolves don't win. It's the town loses just because of all of the infighting and stuff. And I thought, there's one scene where they're all in a room just throwing accusations at each other. And I'm like, this is so true to how it actually was playing the game all those years ago. Oh, man. Josh Rubin is just on an absolute tear, by the way. Scare Me and this movie, fantastic. Love his work. Can't wait to see what he's up to next. And, you know, and I hope he gets his Darkman movie. I know he's been plugging for that on social media quite a bit. I hope he gets it. Sam Richardson is also fantastic in this movie, as is Milena Van Weintraub. I don't know how to pronounce her name. I'm so bad at names, guys. But you probably recognize her, if not from this movie, from the AT&T commercials that she's always in. She's a joy. But they have is such a colorful, eccentric group of characters. The mystery is compelling. There's a lot of red herrings. You know, it's not at the same level as Clue, because I think Clue is one of the top five movies ever made. It's just peak, the best thing ever. But I think this is an admirable approach to reaching the heights of Clue. I think it's a hell of a time. Also, well worth your time. How's that for a recommendation? I don't know what I'm doing. There's always a point in my solo episodes where I just completely lose all grip on reality and I just start talking stuff. I start talking absolute bullcrap. But hey, it's what I does. You can find Werewolves Within at, you know, the VOD spots. I have it on Blu-ray. Got it for Christmas. I asked for it for Christmas because here's how confident I was that I was going to love this movie. I asked for this movie for Christmas before I had ever seen it. And then I watched it and I'm like, I knew it. I knew this was going to be my movie. This was going to be right up my alley. I love werewolves. I love horror comedies, and I love murder mysteries, and I love those small town style interactions. Like, obviously, I said Clue. Tremors is one of my favorite movies of all time. It has that sort of small town, everyone knows each other, but they're not all on the same page kind of aspect. It's great. What more can you ask for out of a movie? I don't know. Number two. My number two pick is Last Night in Soho. Last Night in Soho has a 7.2 out of 10 rating on IMDb and a 75% approval on Rotten Tomatoes. It is directed by Edgar Wright, written by Edgar Wright and Christy Wilson Cairns, and starring Thomasin McKenzie. Last Night in Soho is about an acclaimed director, Edgar Wright's psychological thriller, Eloise, aspiring fashion designer, is mysteriously able to enter the 1960s, where she encounters a dazzling wannabe singer, Sandy. But the glamour is not all it appears to be, and the dreams of the past start to crack and splinter into something far darker. Last Night in Soho was fantastic. It's visually stunning. The music is stunning. And the performances are stunning. This is not just on the list because I am a Anya Taylor-Joy simp. It is not just here because of that. Even though she is fantastic, so is like literally everyone in this movie. I think the time jumps and sort of how they start to bleed into the 60s start to bleed into the current day was masterfully done. I know some people were kind of iffy on the horror elements, thought everything else was good. I was super into the horror parts of this movie. I thought it really was interesting, but I also love, it's a movie about not necessarily the dangers, but the fallacy of nostalgia and how pining for a bygone era, you only think about the good parts. You don't think about the bad parts. You don't think about the things that have gotten better since. You just look at the movies or the music or the fashion or the style of the time. And you're like, I really want that. I wish we still did that. Not realizing that a lot of things were a lot worse back in the day. Eloise, played by Thomasin McKenzie, gets to experience that firsthand when she realizes she has this sort of times dimensional, whatever you want to call it, connection with Sandy, where she gets to see things from her perspective and she sees both the highs and the lows of the era. And it's a very fascinating story. And I was way more invested than I thought I was going to be, because I was like, and of all the eras, the 60s is something I'm probably the least familiar with as far as like the movies and pop culture at the time. So that kind of nostalgia doesn't necessarily resonate with me, but I was still just like super into I felt like the human story was so interesting that I was just on board hook, line, and sinker. The only complaint I really have about the movies is I think the characterization of Eloise's boyfriend, as we're going to call him, I thought he was a bit off. You know, there's certain things that he sees firsthand and it's just like, oh, well, that's, you know, I like her. She looks kind of cool. She got a cool style. I'm going to look over these massive problems. You know, these are things early in a relationship they should be red flags. They should be red flags. But besides that, I was just super invested in this movie top to bottom. And I thought it was just fascinating. It is currently not able to rent on VOD. You got to play that bullcrap premium VOD to get Last Night in Soho right now. But in a couple weeks, it's going to be on Blu-ray and DVD. And I'm assuming normal, not $20 VOD after that. And I would recommend you guys check it out. All right. Now it's time for the damn honorable mentions. So I narrowed... So when I was saying earlier about how so many movies could have made my list, keep that in mind for this. Like I narrowed my honorable mentions down to 15, and the other movies on my list that I'm just going to tell you that I can tell you that I saw them. They're like more or less in order. I just kind of put them in like, I like that movie a little bit more than the other one. And then just kind of set it and forget it kind of thing. It's not hard. I'm not married to the order of the rest of the movies, but more or less, even the first 10 or so of my quote-unquote other movies, at one point I was debating whether or not they could have made my list, because I liked a lot. I thought there was a lot of really quality movies this year is what I'm getting at. So let's run them down. My honorable mentions: Bingo Hell, Slacks, Jacob's Wife, The Night House, Censor, Reelected, Blood Red Sky, 15 Things You Didn't Know About Bigfoot, Number One Will Shock You, Candyman, Bloodthirsty, VHS 94, Boys from County Hell, Meander, The Amusement Park, and this is a little cheeky throw in for honorable mentions, Straight Out of Nowhere, Scooby-Doo Meets Courage the Cowardly Dog. Love Scooby-Doo, obviously, but I'm also a massive Courage the Cowardly Dog fan. The movie was just pretty good, but I'll take it. I'm so needing more Courage the Cowardly Dog material, so I was thrilled to watch this movie. So my other movies that I saw that are not on my list, nor are they honorable mentions, but almost all of them I at least liked. Just don't kill me. I saw a lot of movies, they all can't make the list. Halloween Kills, The Feast, Bloody Hell, Shadow in the Cloud, The Toll, Killer Concept, Till Death, The Conjuring, The Devil Made Me Do It, Night at the Eagle Inn, The Block Island Sound, No One Gets Out Alive, The Vigil, Saint Maud, The Devil Below, The Last Matinee, The Djinn, Lucky, The Stylist, The Old Ways, Too Late, The Invisible Mother, Come True, Jurassic Hunt, The Girl Who Got Away, Great White, The Mutation, For the Sake of Vicious, Double Walker, Satyr, and Claw. Whew. That's a lot. So those are all the movies I saw besides my number one, and that's a lot of movies. So let's rip that band-aid off. Number one. My number one is also a cheat. It's three movies because I couldn't, I was not going to put them separately, guys. Come on. It's the Fear Street trilogy. What do you want from me? You guys know me. I love slashers. I love R.L. Stein. This was a given. And it wasn't just a given from the second they came out. It also turns out, hey, these movies rocked. So what do you expect out of me? Come on. So the first of the trilogy is Fear Street 1994, which has a 6.2 out of 10 on IMDb, 83% approval on Rotten Tomatoes. Part 2, 1978, has a 6.7 out of 10 on IMDb, 88% on Rotten Tomatoes. Part 3, 1666, 6.6 out of 10 on IMDb, 90% on Rotten Tomatoes. All three were directed by Lee Janiak, 1994 was written by Kyle Killian and Phil Graziati. Part 2 was written by Phil Graziati and Lee Janiak and Zach Olwelchik. Part 3 was written by Phil Graziati, Lee Janiak, and Kate Treffy. The star of 1994 and 1666 is Kiana Madeira, and 78 star is Sadie Sink. I'm just going to run down all the synopses in a row. 1994. In Shadyside, the murder capital of the United States, yet another brutal, unmotivated massacre sends shivers down the spine. And more, the unholy name of Sarah Fear, a cursed local witch, keeps popping up. Now something evil has awoken, forcing a team of five teenage friends to summon up the courage to get to the bottom of a bloody, centuries-old secret and fight tooth and nail against unstoppable supernatural forces to stay alive. But in this dangerous cat-and-mouse game, someone else makes the rules. Can the young defenders lift the town curse and end it all? 1978. Against the backdrop of the endless feud between the teenagers of Shadyside and Sunnyvale, and the century-spanning curse of the doomed witch, Sarah Fear, a spate of brutal axe murders terrorizes the unsuspecting campers of Camp Nightwing. Now, after the pitiless killings in Fear Street 1994, a handful of lucky survivors find themselves in dire need of help to link the past to the present and hopefully unearth the gruesome truth. But warm, bright red blood follows. Sorry. But warm, bright red blood follows. Will Dina and her friends ever find out what happened that horrible July? 1666. An unspeakable evil has cast its unholy shadow over Union, the original settlement before its division into Sunnyvale and Shadyside, ushering in a new era of misfortune and terror. In the aftermath of the brutal mall killings in Fear Street 1994, Dina finds herself plagued by vivid, blood-curdling visions of death and decay, forcing Cindy Berman, the only one who saw the sorceress and survived, after the bloody Camp Nightwing massacre in Fear Street 1978, to step in. Now there is no turning back, and until body and hand unite, no one is safe from the fiery curse of the damned Sarah Fear. But evil has no boundaries. What will it take to rid Shadyside of the witch's sin?
Oh, it's a lot of dramatic voice. I mean, what do you want from me? Fear Street rocked. It's a slasher. You know I love slashers. You know I love slashers with a gimmick. This movie, this trilogy had like 8 slashers with 8 different gimmicks. I'll watch 5 more to see each of the slashers get their own film. I'm sorry. Am I supposed to apologize for being Chris Donovan? Ain't happening here. This is exactly my kind of movies. It's a slasher. It's fun. It's got style. It's got panache. It's just, what more do you want? And it's based on Fear Street. It's R.L. Stein creations. Come on, guys. I loved these movies. I waited till all 3 came out so I could watch them one after another, so I wouldn't have to wait a week in between each movie. But I think it's really cool. I loved that all three, which are available on Netflix. And also Netflix, I know you never give Blu-rays to your original movies, but please make an exception for this. I want a Blu-ray collector set of these three. Pretty, pretty please. For your old pal, Chris Donovan. What more can I say? A lot of people talk about Fear Street. It's just great. It's not going to hit you. It's not going to be, you know, there's not a lot of hidden message. Even though I think it's a really interesting theme throughout these three, which I won't go into unless I do a full review, which I might. I would love to have someone on to discuss Fear Street with me. Of the three, I think probably if you were to put me on the spot, I would probably say Part 2 is my favorite, just because I think Part 2 is the most complete self-contained movie. The third one is half a old-timey witch movie and half a 90s slasher, and it's even though I think that one has a lot of the really amazing and, you know, callback kind of scenes, it's hard to sort of balance those two tones with each other. And 1994 was definitely amazing as well, but I just feel like there's a lot going on in that one. But I mean, like I said, I wasn't going to put these three separately and have all three pop up in my list. That means, you know, I would get to talk about less movies. It was hard enough to make this list counting this as one movie. But yeah, I love Fear Street. I love the books. Love R.L. Stein. I still watch Goosebumps the show to this day. I still read and collect the books. I love slashers. You had a Skull Mask slasher. You had a Bagface Jason type slasher. You had a 1950s like girl with a switchblade. I want to see her movie. I want her to see that movie so badly. Everything about it was just, it was just complete pure popcorn fun, and I could not have been happier that we have. I'm just happy that we have it. I can just, if I'm wanting to just watch a fun movie, just throw it on, boom, have a good time. But yeah, the Fear Street trilogy is my number one pick of the year, which should surprise absolutely no one. So that's my top 10 horror movies of 2021 completed. Now I can do something other than cram horror movies for the next couple months. I'm so happy. Anyway, we're going to be cracking right along here, Professional Horror Podcast. We got a very special episode in 2 weeks that I'm super, super, super excited about. Me and Nicole will be playing a little horror game I whipped up, and I've already recorded it. I've already edited it. It's coming out 2 weeks after this episode. I think it's going to come out on a Tuesday. I think it's coming out Tuesday the 11th or so. So this will be maybe January 28th. I set a date, which means it has to set in stone, right? That's how things work. So look out for that, and then we're gonna have some more episodes with some more guests, some more movies, more games, more fun, more everything. If you like this podcast, be sure to rate and review on all the usual suspects you get podcasts on: Apple, Spotify, Amazon, Google, you name it, it's there. And also be sure to follow me on Instagram at Professional Horror, and on Twitter at @the_don_17, or email me at professionalhorror@gmail.com. My voice is dying. So until next time, stay scary, but keep it professional.